This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Here we go on this Saturday morning, always the biggest and the best over the next 2 hours at Sports Map Radio Network, sportsmapradio.com, home of the Big E Sports Show. I am your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell. Thank you so much for joining us on this Saturday. Would love to hear from you over the next 2 hours at eRadio Sports, info at eradiosports.com, and podcastarena.com. I tell you what, we're going to hit on a variety of subjects. We've completely got you covered. College football, the Red River rivalry. The countdown is on. It's coming up in the next hour. Texas, Oklahoma. Also, Notre Dame, Florida State. Looking forward to that game. 7:30 kickoff Eastern time. We have also landed a very special interview. Justin Leonard from the PGA Tour and Golf Channel's very own will be joining us for some PGA news and notes and a special book review with Joshua Mendelson, who has just released a new book on the NBA salary cap. Delighted to welcome back to our program Jack McCraw. Give him a follow at JackMC15. And we're in Houston, Jack. Big news this week. Did Bill O'Brien deserve to be fired? Of course, the Texans fire their head coach and general manager after an 0-4 start.
Big E, I got to be honest with you. I personally am not a Texans fan, but living here in Houston, I don't think there is a much more hated sports figure in the city of Houston than Bill O'Brien. Me personally, I thought he should have been fired after their playoff loss against the Indianapolis Colts.
Bill O'Brien, 58-42, four division titles in the, seven seasons that he was there. Why do you think he wasn't able to find success?
That's a really good question because he had a really talented roster. You
right.
had a potential top five quarterback in Deshaun Watson. You had one of the greatest defensive players of all time in J.J. Watt. But it just seemed like maybe his ego really got to him because he really didn't get along with guys like Jadeveon Clowney. And then the DeAndre Hopkins issue, which was totally bananas, if for lack of a better term. It just seemed like he couldn't get well with those guys. And those are two cornerstone players that can lead your team to multiple Super Bowl accolades if played right. I mean, I thought starting off Bill O'Brien was doing a good job after coming in for Gary Kubiak, but it just got to the point where he could only win division titles, but he could never get you guys over the hump.
Okay, what a great way to kick off our program, talking some NFL news and notes with our producer, Jack McCraw. Stick around. You know what? We're going to shift gears completely. We're going to talk some PGA news and notes with the great Justin Leonard after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, Alyssa Walker Campbell, welcome back on this Saturday morning. Sports Map Radio Network, sportsmapradio.com, and the Big E Sports Show. Many different ways to connect with us and platforms. You can always join us on Twitter. We are live at eRadio Sports, info at eradiosports.com, and podcast arena.com. As always, we like to pause, recognize the folks that make it happen at our network, and that is O'Reilly Auto Parts, where they will help make your auto repair, maintenance, and restoration projects easier. So when your car isn't stopping like it used to, the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts will help you find the brake parts and supplies you need to do the job right the first time. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. As promised, it is time to tee it up. Our PGA News and Notes continues. And up next, we are delighted to have with us former PGA Tour player, analyst with the Golf Channel, and we will never forget when he drained one of the greatest putts in golf history at the 1999 Ryder Cup to solidify the win. We are so delighted and honored to have with us on the program this morning, and that is the great Justin Leonard. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, let's open up our conversation and highlight one of the biggest storylines in golf, and that, of course, is Bryson DeChambeau. We have witnessed just his physical transformation, and he continues to prove that adding bulk and increasing one's club head speed will pay big dividends. So, Justin, what are some of your takeaways from watching him throughout the year, and are you a believer?
Well, I'm a believer now. After watching what he did at Wingfoot in person, it really has been. I mean, the transformation he's made over the last year, really. It was about this time last year when he said he was going to go and he was going to, you know, put on some weight, put on some muscle, and we weren't going to recognize him. And a lot of times you hear people say that, and, you know, 5 or 10 pounds, but 40 pounds later, 20 plus yards, you know, you look at what he does with the tempo of his swing, it looks a bit more like a long drive swing and setup, and it's really the tempo, you know, very quick movement off the ball. You know, it's not just kind of low and slow and gradually building up speed. His speed is right off the ball. And to be able to drive the ball that far and still hit it straight, not straight to where he's hitting all the fairways, but when you have that much clubhead speed, your miss can, you know, is much easier to get 30, 40, 50 yards offline. He doesn't hit that many shots like that. And to get the ball down there as far as he does, in good shape, not always in the fairway again, but in good shape, it's remarkable. And then also what he's done with his putting, finding this method with, you know, kind of the putter braced against his forearm. And again, it looks very rigid and robotic, but it's completely repeatable for him. And he's taking the modern game. I mean, the game's been going in this direction for the last 10 years. Guys being more aggressive with the driver. The driver is almost the most important club in the bag. And he's taken it to another level, and I think he's really opened a lot of people's eyes.
Bryson DeChambeau, as you had mentioned, talking about the U.S. Open, he shot 3-under-67 to win, 6 shots over Matthew Wolff last month. So going forward, I mean, Justin, what does his style mean for the game of golf? I mean, this grip it and rip it. What do you think?
It's just a continuation. I think that people are realizing how vital clubhead speed is. And if you look at the best players in the world, they're all some of the longest hitters in the world as well. Bryson's right up there. Dustin Johnson,
mm-hmm.
Roy McIlroy, you know, those guys, Brooks Koepka, those guys hit the ball as far as, you know, almost anybody else. And so that's the direction the game is going. He's taken the whole science of it, though, to a new level. I don't think it's a level that a lot of players are comfortable with as far as, you know, the things he does in practice rounds and launch monitor on chips and putting and all those kind of things. But I do think that people will take certain elements from it, kind of calibrating every day. I was in Napa at the Safeway Open just a month ago, and
mm-hmm.
he was already having an effect there even before he won the U.S. Open. I was talking with DJ Trahan, and he's out there Sunday morning. He's got his launch monitor. And he turned around. I was watching him hit a few balls because he was near the lead, and I said, is this something you do often? Do you do this every day before rounds? He said, well, he just started, but he's certainly going to, because the temperature from morning to afternoon, I mean, he said even that week it was a matter of 10 yards difference with his 7-iron. And so I remember when I was playing those first 2 or 3 holes, it was a little bit of a guess as far as how far the ball was going and how firm the greens were and all those kind of things. And I always felt like I needed to ease my way into the round. And you know, DJ Trahan was like, look, I know on the first hole how far my 7, 8-iron, whatever's going. And so I think that's a tool that Bryson uses and has used. And I think you're going to see more guys go to it to try and use some of the technology that's available. I don't know if they'll do it to the degree that he's done it, but he certainly opened a lot of eyes as far as the methods that he does things. I mean, he played a practice round at the U.S. Open with Tiger one day and Phil the next. Normally those two guys, Tiger and Phil, are the ones doing all the talking.
Mm-hmm.
I followed them around a little bit. They were listening. They weren't talking much. And if they were talking, it was to ask a question. So two of the greatest minds in the game, and Bryson is you know, passing on knowledge to those guys and what he does. And so, you know, I think that, again, certain guys will take pieces of it, but to do all of the science that Bryson does, I don't think it were. I think that would work for very few players.
He's an analyst on the Golf Channel, former PGA pro, Justin Leonard, with us at SportsMap Radio, sportsmapradio.com, the Big E Sports Show. So will clubhead speed and distance be the most important skill that these players need to attain going forward?
I think it's to get into the top 5 or 10 in the world. Yes, it is. But, you know, you look at Webb Simpson. Now, he's got longer. He's probably went from one of the shortest players in the field. I mean, you go back to when he won the Players just a couple years ago. He might have been the shortest player in the field to make the cut. Length is not a huge advantage on that golf course, but week in and week out on tour it is. And Webb's added some distance the last couple years. I'd say a good 10 to 15 yards. To where he's, you know, more average, maybe just above average. And I believe he's in the top 10 in the world. So it's not an absolute, but it certainly does make the game easier. And guys aren't going to start getting any shorter. And so I think it's important to have some club head speed. If not, you certainly have to do other parts, other areas of the game have to be exceptional. In order to kind of mitigate a lack of distance.
Our PGA News and Notes continues with the Golf Channel's very own Justin Leonard after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
We are so glad you're with us. Sports Map Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, having an exclusive interview with former golf star on the PGA Tour, a total of 12 wins. He was the Ryder Cup hero, and of course, in 97, the British Open champ at Royal Troon, 98 Players Championship, a two-time All-American at Texas. Justin Leonard is our very special guest. So let's reflect. I mean, how much has the game changed since you've been on tour?
Well, when I first got out on tour in 1994, distance wasn't very important. I mean, certainly not the way it is now. You know, Greg Norman was probably the best driver of the golf ball, Davis Love, Fred Couples. But Nick Price wasn't the longest player out there. He was more medium length, and he reached number one in the world. There was really more, it was more of a precision game. And then when everybody went to a solid core ball, which I believe was around 2000, between 2000 and 2002, all of a sudden everything changed. And guys started to get, the longer players got even longer. You know, as the driver heads got larger, it really became, you know, more of a length dominated game. And that's really continued, especially in the last 10 years. You know, I played through 2016. In the last 4 or 5 years that I played, I really felt like I was beating my head against a wall trying to compete with guys who could carry the ball 290, 300 yards. You know, that was 5 or 6 years ago. Now it's 310 and 320.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so, it's not just the equipment. It's the level of athlete that the game attracts right now. You know, these players were inspired by watching Tiger Woods, and, he's playing against an entire generation that he basically created. They saw, you know, and Tiger was one of the longest players out there. And so you're getting athletes in the game of golf that 15, 20 years ago, they were on the football field or on the baseball field, even basketball. And now golf is recognized much more as an athletic sport. And so the level of athleticism that these guys have now, it's off the charts. It's something that golf hasn't seen before, and that combined with the technology that's available from equipment standpoint to launch monitors and those kind of things, it's really led to where the game is now. And it's fun. It's fun to watch. Mm-hmm. I mean, I consider myself a traditionalist in a lot of sense, partly because of the way I played, partly because of the generation that I played in. I used a persimmon wood on the PGA Tour.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's archaic in that sense. But so being a traditionalist, it's fun to watch. If you said, okay, you can go to this golf tournament, you can only follow one player, who would I go watch? I'd probably go watch Bryson DeChambeau because I want to see him take out driver on holes that I didn't think it was possible or couldn't figure out why, and then just watch him do it. It's being a traditionalist, I think the game's in a great spot. I think it's fun to watch. There are certain golf courses that these guys are going to shoot 15, 20 under par on. It's just a fact. But you throw in a classic course like Wingfoot that has enough length, rough, severe greens, and the weather was perfect. Outside of Bryson at 6 under par, even par was the best score, next best score. So there's still plenty of ways to challenge these guys, but it's a lot of fun to watch them, you know, pull out driver and hit it down there and see what they come up with. I mean, it's exciting to watch. I'd rather watch that than see these guys hit two irons to the corner of dog legs and seven irons all day long. Man, that's just not as much fun to watch.
Justin, you mentioned you're a traditionalist. You certainly are a purist when you talk about the game of golf. Are you surprised to see Bryson have so many critics? And why do you think there's been some resistance to embracing something fresh and embracing something new?
Well, I think that he's run into a little bit of a, you know, he has a few, not I would say just slight disagreements with officials trying to get certain rulings. I would say that he's handled a couple things kind of poorly. There was the incident with a cameraman somewhere. He played out of a bunker, and he wasn't real thrilled about his shot, and the cameraman stayed on him, and I don't know. He banged his club into his bag or something. Something that everybody's done at some point or another. If you haven't done it, you play golf, you will do it very soon. And, you know, he had a little confrontation with the cameraman and talking about hurting his brand and those kind of things. I was 25, 26 years old. I didn't handle myself the way I would handle myself now in a lot of different situations, just because I know a little better. I have a little better perspective. But I think a couple of those instances probably, make people a little more reserved about embracing what he's doing. But at the same time, if you play on the PGA Tour and you're not taking notice of what he's doing and how he's doing it, not that everybody can emulate it, but if you're not taking something from it, taking notice, trying to change the way you do things a little bit, I think you're putting yourself behind the eight ball.
So what do you anticipate in the month of November when Bryson tees it up at Augusta National? I mean, length, it's got to be an advantage for him once again, right? I mean, how do you think the course sets up to his game?
I think the golf course at Augusta National sets up very well for his game. It'll be interesting to see exactly how the golf course plays. My guess, and from what I've heard and read, it should be a bit softer. And you would think that would favor the long hitters. The last time it played really soft and long, Zach Johnson won, laid up on all the par fives. So it kind of goes against what you would think would happen. You would think if it's playing long and it's a little cooler, that plays in a longer hitter's hands, and it just might. I have a feeling it will. I have a feeling that Bryson will be up there. I think this is a great opportunity for Rory McIlroy to try and complete the career Grand Slam. You know, when he won at Congressional, it was soft. When he won at Kew Island, it wasn't a real fast, hard Kew Island. It was played more in the air. I think that's the kind of condition that fits him best. And I think having the U.S. Open in September and the Masters just 2 months later probably helps Rory as well, because he doesn't have that basically 8 or 9 month buildup from now the Open in a typical year, so it's next year, the Open Championship in July, and then you have the Masters in April, and nothing, no major championship in between. I think having the PGA in August, the U.S. Open in September, will help Rory McIlroy, because he doesn't have that 7 month long buildup. And so I see both of those guys having an excellent chance at Augusta in November.
We are wrapping up our time. Our very special guest, Justin Leonard from the Golf Channel, who travels throughout the year covering so many of the PGA Tour events, does a fantastic job. This certainly has been a very different year due to COVID-19. The dynamic is very different. There's not fans. There's not spectators. Just give me a quick hit. I mean, how much do you think the players are missing the fans at these tournaments?
I think all of the players are missing the fans. I think that for the younger players, and for maybe the not the marquee names, it doesn't really affect their game. I think that the stars of the game, they're the ones who miss the fans the most, because they almost need that energy out there on the golf course to really get into it. That's something that Rory McIlroy has talked about publicly. Difficult to really get himself up for it. Brooks Koepka has said the same thing. I think those are the guys that really rely on the fans. It's odd. It's odd at the PGA Championship. You think of Colin Morikawa making that eagle at 16. Mm-hmm. The roar you would have heard throughout that golf course.
Right.
And there were, at one point in the back nine, there were seven players tied for the lead. The roars you would have heard on that golf course, but there was nothing. Think about, you know, some of the things that happened at the U.S. Open, playing there in front of a New York crowd, and Bryson, who's a little bit polarizing. It would have been fascinating to watch that. Unfortunately, we didn't get that. And then, Augusta may be the strangest of all to have without fans. And Saturday at Augusta has kind of become maybe the most challenging day. And then Sunday, they put the pins on the back nine, especially in some positions where you can feed the ball into it because they want the roars on Sunday. You're not going to have any of that. I think members are going to be allowed on the grounds, but I think it'll be in a very low-key way. And so we do. We all miss the fans from a television perspective, from the players' perspective. But it has been wonderful to have live golf on television this summer, and for it to go as smoothly as it's gone is a real testament to Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour, the USGA, the PGA of America, for all the things that they've done to get a schedule in place, to have a great plan, and then to make tweaks to it on the fly as they needed to. Hats off to those guys for what they've done to be able to get golf back up and running and to be as successful as it's been.
The Golf Channel's very own Justin Leonard has been with us, SportsMap Radio, sportsmapradio.com, the Big E Sports Show. And when is your next event?
My next event to work is the Bermuda Championship. So I'll be there. I'll be down in Houston for the Houston Open.
Oh,
and then
nice.
I'll
okay.
be at I'll be at the Masters the week after that.
Okay.
This is is the Big E Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, on this Saturday morning, we are back with you at SportsMap Radio Network, sportsmapradio.com, and you have dialed into the Big E Sports Show. I'm Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Always love to connect with our audience and all of our listeners. You can join us live on Twitter at eRadioSports, info at eRadioSports.com, and podcast arena.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts will help make your auto repair, maintenance, and restoration projects easier. So when your car isn't stopping like it used to, the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts will help you find the brake parts and supplies you need to do the job right the first time. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. It is game day and time to get you ready for one of the biggest rivalries in all of college sports that is about to get underway at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, Texas. You bet. It's time to talk some OU Texas. Both teams coming off of disappointing losses. And joining us this morning to provide some insight and perspective from 1400 KREF in Norman, Oklahoma, a regular guest on our program, and that is the great and legendary James Hale. Hello, James. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, E. I hope things are going well with you. It's weird at the Cotton Bowl with no state fair. The fans cut down to 25%, so nobody's yelling at me, flipping me off, or anything else. And even though I wear neutral colors, enough people know that I cover OU, so the Texas fans get after me usually pretty good here. And so I haven't seen any of them, so I'm good.
Well, talk to us about this game. I mean, Oklahoma and Texas, these are two teams that are limping into the rivalry game. So let's start with the Sooners. Yeah. I mean, what's wrong with them? Because I think they're a much more talented team than their record indicates at 1-2.
Well, at one point, everybody thought they were a top four team in the country and a sure bet to get back to the college football playoffs and win their sixth straight Big 12 championship. But COVID has equalized the playing field for everybody. Everybody's had to go through the same thing. And even though I think Oklahoma handled COVID as well as anybody has, they still had players that got it. Then you had contact tracing, and you had guys miss practice. And then as they got into camp, three or four more guys got it. And so the contact tracing again. For instance, Trey Norwood missed all of training camp. He only practiced two or three days. He missed 28 days, and he never got COVID-19. It was just in contact tracing all the time. Then Oklahoma's prized group of freshman DBs all went through similar things, and so they were out 14 days. Well, right now, this defense could certainly use some infusion of talent, especially on the back end. So now everybody's gone through it. I mean, Kansas State was missing eight guys when they beat Oklahoma. Iowa State went through it too, so it's not an excuse. But it is a telltale sign. And then the three guys that are suspended at OU, Ramondre Stevenson, Trey John Bridges, and Ronnie Perkins, would all be starting and playing and solving some issues that Oklahoma has right now. So Oklahoma's lost a lot of personnel. And, yeah, they were ranked number three in the country at one point, and now they are 0-2 in the conference. They've lost to two teams they normally beat. I know Kansas State's beat them in back-to-back years, but normally – Oklahoma would beat Kansas State. And you still have the big game. So, you know, Texas today, you've got Oklahoma State coming up in the future. Heck, TCU is coming up in a couple of weeks. That's going to be in Fort Worth. So, you know, Oklahoma's team hasn't fired. The offense isn't quite as good as it has been in the past to bail out the defense. And the defense has tackled so poorly in their two losses. And then Oklahoma's also given up major plays in special teams. So there's not a facet of the game right now Oklahoma's playing well in.
So how much has depth been an issue for Oklahoma? Because you're talking about the roster has been impacted by COVID-19.
Well, I think Oklahoma has good depth, but they're not necessarily being able to play it. The DBs that I told you about, the DJ Grahams and the Ellisons and the, you know, that group, Bryson Washington and that Eaton, Joshua Eaton, all those guys were prized recruits that OU felt would eventually change the culture of the defense and the secondary. They're bigger, you know, they're taller, leaner guys than they're currently playing with, but they haven't been able to play them. They're just now getting them ready to play. And I don't know if OU will feel confident in those young players enough to play them today against Texas. But this has been a problem for OU in that that their depth is good, and I think a lot of teams would recognize they'll use depth as good as just about anybody out there. But, you know, so far it just hasn't played up to par. They're playing a lot a freshman left tackle. How many times does that happen? Even Orlando Brown redshirted a year before he played. They got a senior who has struggled somewhat alternating with him. Then the guards have committed more penalties than anybody else on the squad. So you combine, you know, the issues of the depth with veterans not playing up to the standard you would think they would play with. That puts a lot of pressure on Spencer Rattler, who's played well enough to win in the two games. But at the end of the game, where they really needed him to shine, he didn't. He faltered against Kansas State. And, you know, he threw an interception late in the game against Iowa State. So it's been a big problem. No question about it. We'll see if the Sooners play better from this point on.
You are listening to the familiar voice, host of Total Sports on KREF in Norman, Oklahoma. Check him out, Patreon, patreon.com, for all of his diehard Sooner reports, his video, his podcast. James, where can you direct our listeners to sign up for that?
All you got to do is Google James Hale, diehard Sooner report, become a patron. It's $5 or, you know, that's, you can pay $5 and get all those reports. If you want to donate more, that's fine. You could do that too. But, you know, and hey, I put 3 to 5 podcasts up a day, and you know, and it's all OU driven. And you know, I'll talk, if I can talk college football or something with OU involved in it, I may do that too. But they're short. You know, they're anywhere from 2 to 4 minutes, 5 minutes. And, you know, you can get in there, get your news, and get out and go on about your day.
The countdown is on. Oklahoma, Texas, looking forward to the Red River rivalry this morning. So as you were just talking about, the biggest issue that Oklahoma must address is what tackling. I mean, that's been a real problem for the Sooners, but also it's been a problem for Texas. So, I mean, is this a personnel issue? I mean, what do you anticipate that they might do differently this morning?
I'm not sure. Again, in the secondary, I don't know if they can get guys ready to play. But Jeremiah Crudell is a redshirt freshman that's played a little at the nickel. Buki has not played well at the nickelback so far this year, and you wonder why he isn't getting more action. Bryson Washington, who is a prized freshman that went through that COVID stuff, they're now working him at nickel a little bit. They could throw him out there. But, you know, again, you have underclassmen that are not playing well. Patrick Fields is the defensive captain for the Sooners this year, and he's not off to a good start at all. They're whiffing on tackles that, you know, when they do that, they give up tons of yak yardage. I mean, Iowa State had close to 100 yards in yak yardage off missed tackles from Oklahoma. So on a tackle where you deem they should make the tackle, just get the guy down. It doesn't matter if it's by his shoestring, you grab his hair. It doesn't matter. You got to get him down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and so it's been a big problem. Now, Texas has the same problem on defense. They have not tackled well this year, and they have Cade Stearns, and they have, you know, they have guys like Chris Brown that have played a lot, Overshones played a lot, you know, but yet they haven't tackled well either. So maybe in this game, for once, we always say who runs the ball the best will win. Maybe it will be who actually tackles the best,
yeah,
and doesn't give up 100 yards of yak yardage will win.
Okay, just a moment ago, you had mentioned Ronnie Perkins. He's expected, what, to make his season debut today against Texas? I mean, just tell me this. I mean, how big of a difference can he make? Tell us a little bit about Ronnie.
Well, if Ronnie can play today, and I haven't seen him yet, you know, but if he can play today, it makes a big difference. He's their best defensive player. It's either he or Jalen Redmond. Redmond's opted out. Perkins is an NFL player. So you bring in a premium player that has been out so far. And then you team him with Isaiah Thomas, who's been somewhat of a journeyman, but as a junior is finally getting a chance, and he has played really well. He's one defensive player that hasn't been missing tackles and has been handling his assignments. He's been their best player so far. It just strengthens their defensive line. This guy has 11 sacks in 2 years. He has 21.5 tackles for losses. He's a premium player. He's a guy you have to game plan for. So it makes all the difference if Ronnie's in there. And if you get him back, then you get one of your better players back on your football team, a guy that if he came out, I think would get drafted this year in the NFL draft. So, you know, he's a quality player, and I think he's a player that That will make a huge difference, and I think he's going to play, so hopefully we'll see him out here soon.
It is a big weekend. Red River rivalry, we are breaking it all down. Oklahoma, Texas, with our good friend James Hale, host of Total Sports, 1400 KREF in Norman, Oklahoma. Now, Jay, talk to me about, as far as head coach Lincoln Riley, I mean, what is his frustration level at this point? I mean, and, you know, the time that you're around him, I mean, how does he handle losing? I mean, this is a coach that's not accustomed to losing.
I think he's handled it pretty well so far. One thing I will say about him, he's a player's coach. So he immediately rallies his team and has a team meeting on Sunday and says, I believe in you. I believe we're a good football team. Don't give up on you, because I'm not giving up on you. You know, let's stay together. There were a couple of players that posted on Twitter some frustrations about not playing, a couple of those young players in the secondary I'm talking about. He saw that because OU's all over social media, so they see it when any player will post anything. And it wasn't real complaining. It was some subtle, jibs at saying, hey, free me, play me, I can help, you know, something like that. And he just wanted to get everybody together and, hey, we're all in. Let's keep this within here. You know, yeah, we've lost a couple of games. We could have won them both. We're going to tell you why we lost them both. So he's handled it, I think, very, very well. I really do. I think he's still, he's a very much a player's coach. He gives them freedoms. Maybe some other coaches won't. I think they like playing for him. They certainly do listen to him. They don't tune him out when he speaks. And he still has the run of the locker room.
The Sooners are off to a slow start in Big 12 conference play. They're 0-2 and looking to get back on track this morning. James, what's your level of concern that they might not be able to win the Big 12 conference? And are they still a college football playoff team?
No, they're not a college football playoff team right now. And I'm very concerned about them winning the Big. They haven't even played the two teams that are considered, favorites with them. I mean, they haven't played Oklahoma State. They're playing Texas today.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't gone on the road and played TCU, and everybody knows that's always a tough battle. You've lost to Kansas State and Iowa State, and Iowa State, some people thought they might be a contender, but nobody thought Kansas State would be. Coach Klieman didn't even know if he was going to be able to play that game. He was short so many players. When they lost their season opening game, I think he was minus 40 guys on his roster. So he had actually made a statement that, hey, this year we're going to just try to get through it and really gear up for next year. Well, now he's 2-0 in the conference. So he's changing that thought process, and he was just being honest. Well, that's where Oklahoma's at. They've lost to two teams they should beat. It's doubtful those two teams can run through the conference and go undefeated, so that's a positive. But they own the tiebreaker against OU. So OU has to beat Texas. They have to beat Oklahoma State. They have to beat TCU. Well, they have to win the rest of their games. They've already lost more games in the conference than they have in a long, long time, and they just can't afford to lose another game. So, yeah, I'm very concerned they can win the conference championship. In fact, I would say at this point, it's going to be really hard for them to do that.
Our Red River rivalry coverage will continue with James Hale, host of Total Sports, after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 1 Sports Map Radio Network, sportsmapradio.com. You have dialed in to the Big E Sports Show, and we're getting you ready for some college football, Oklahoma, Texas. Right now, let's rejoin James Hale. Okay, we hit on Oklahoma. Talk to me about Texas. Let's get the pulse on the Longhorns. And just how surprised are you to see them lose to TCU at home?
Well, it was disappointing because they had every chance to win that game. And again, their defense is as porous as OU's. And yet they have a bunch of five-star players and a bunch of four-star players, and they should be playing better. Both teams have talent on defense, but both teams aren't playing fundamentally sound. Sam Ellinger, though, is one of the top quarterbacks in the country. Mm-hmm. He's a good team leader. Texas probably hasn't played as well as he would have hoped. He's 1-3 against OU, I think it is. But he's a leader. You know, he met with his team after they lost to TCU, and he said, this is an embarrassment. Texas deserves better. The university does, and we're gonna provide it. If Texas is ever going to beat OU in the Big 12, I say this facetiously, but when you look at the run Oklahoma's on, this is the year. You have a senior quarterback. OU has a redshirt freshman that has three starts under his belt, and he's lost two in a row. And even though I think that Spencer Rattler has more arm talent than Sam, the leadership and the running ability of Ellinger is certainly on top of that. As you pointed out, Texas is trying to find, their offensive line. How well are they going to rush the ball?
Mm-hmm.
Ingram and his snafu of holding the ball up early, and, that's embarrassing. How does he come back from that? Tom Herman, is he on the hot seat or not? If he loses against Oklahoma, he definitely will be. If he beats Oklahoma, uh-huh. though, and they're 2-1 in the conference and they remain on course, if they can win the rest of their games, they're going to be in the Big 12 championship and everything's going to be fine with him. So this is a huge game for both teams, but it's really big for Texas because when you really add it up, Texas has a great chance to win this game today. But we'll see if Rattler, finds some magic, and we'll see if the offensive line gels. And gosh, if Oklahoma just makes a tackle on defense, just one or two, maybe they can continue to thrive and win this game today and get back on track to competing for the conference championship.
Oklahoma, Texas, it's about to get underway. James Hale has been our very special guest. Host of Total Sports 1400 KREF in Norman, Oklahoma. Subscribe to Patreon. Die Hard Sooner Reports. James provides some wonderful information 3 to 4 times a day. And James, be safe, wear your mask, and we look forward to talking to you again real soon. Thank you, my friend.
I'll definitely do it. Thanks, man. See you.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Hour 2. Sports Talk Radio.